Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Well, a funny thing happened on the way to the book tour. Amy Sutherland wrote a book called Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers. She'd followed a group of students at the Harvard of Animal Training, as she called it, for their first year of classes as they learned to deal with tarantulas, mandrills, rodents, and cheetahs. The book was a natural at appealing to all the would-be Dr. Doolittles in the world who've always harbored a secret desire to pet a tiger. Then she wrote a little essay in the Sunday Style section of the New York Times, yes, the Style section, about using some of those wild animal training techniques on a purportedly more domesticated creature, her husband. That essay, What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage, really seems to have struck a chord. In fact, it's been the most emailed article of the summer at the New York Times website. Maureen Dowd wrote a column about it. Jack Schaefer weighed in at Slate.com. There have been letters, angry and grateful. We've linked to it on our website. If you'd like to take a look, go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Amy Sutherland joins me now to talk about animals, emails, and marriages. And yes, we can take your phone calls, especially if you have read or forwarded this article yourself, at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Amy Sutherland, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Now, for those of our listeners who have not read your Modern Love column, mm-hmm. can you tell us a bit of what inspired it?
Well, I was working on this book following students as they learned the most progressive methods of animal training. And the more time I spent out at the teaching zoo watching them, you know, teach a hyena to do a pirouette and a camel to shoot hoops and all these fantastic things, it just slowly began to dawn on me that a lot of these techniques would make practical sense on a human, on a specific human in my case, and that was my husband, Scott.
So tell a little bit of the story for people who have not read the article. You started to do what specifically?
So I started taking these techniques home, and the sort of fundamental method I used is that I began to focus on what Scott did that I liked and reward that, and to, as much as I could, ignore the behavior I didn't like, which is a standard way to work with animals,
to stop nagging, as you put it in the article.
Yes. I stopped nagging.
You said nagging. I didn't.
Right. No. I admit it. I was nagging. I think, you know, there's, you know, 99.9% of women have had a nag or two come out of their mouth. And, you know, this is actually, it seems like such an obvious thing, but it's very counterintuitive to how a lot of humans are, because we tend to be negative or say, I want you to do this because I said so. Or, you know, we're very quick to criticize. And so this isn't how you work with animals. So I thought, well, why would you work with animals in this positive way and not work with people in your life like this?
So in your husband's case, it had a lot to do with, like, leaving his dirty socks around and things like that?
Yeah, well, he has, you know, these kind of husband behaviors that are very common. He, you know, he leaves some of his more sort of smelly clothes laying around, especially his bike wear. And the other thing I started to use was what trainers call approximations, and I mentioned this in the column, and that is that a trainer would never, ever try to teach a baboon to do an entire flip in one session. That's just unrealistic. So you would teach, you know, like a little jump, a higher jump, and us humans often try to get somebody to change a behavior immediately from top to bottom.
Okay, so Scott leaves his bicycle helmet, I hope he wears a helmet, in the middle of the living room, and the new behavior has you do what?
Well, instead of, like, thinking, I'm going to make him, get him to pick up all his stuff all the time, I just pick one thing, say, the helmet. And if he happens to put his helmet on a bench one day, instead of leaving it on the floor, I point this out and say, thanks for putting your helmet away, even though it's technically not away, but
But it's what
we're
call,
working in baby steps.
It's an approximation.
Right.
It's the baby step. Okay. Yeah. So this worked?
This worked. I mean, this worked in that I can't say that, like, my husband has no annoying habits anymore. That's really not the point. The point was to start coming up with new ways to work with these little annoying things that can drag down so many relationships.
All right. Why do you think this became the most emailed article on the Times website for so long?
Brian, I'm still thinking about that one, but I have a couple theories. One is it was funny, and it was a funny, fresh approach to sort of little, you know, something that a lot of people have an experience with, and that is they're generally happily married, but those little annoying things build up over the course of a day, not to mention a month and a lifetime. And I think that, you know, it's a funny approach to sort of go at this via animal behavior, but a lot of these ideas sort of make sort of sound sense when you read them.
Yeah. Well, some people, mainly men, but not only men,
right,
have taken offense at
right,
the suggestions that the same techniques that work on wild animals will work on them. Do you think you shortchanged men a little bit, or are your critics shortchanging wild animals?
Well, I think the critics are, yes, I think they are shortchanging wild animals.
Really?
Because I personally, you know, I'm a card-carrying member of the animal kingdom and proud of it. And, you know, I find it very refreshing.
You're a primate, right?
I'm a higher primate,
yes,
just to be exact. And I find it really refreshing to find out that there are some universal rules of behavior that work across all species from, say, oh, I don't know, like a small fish to a Harvard PhD. I mean, I think for me personally, that is really exciting.
But what about, one friend of mine said, yeah, the biggest thing that struck her, mm-hmm, was not that you were using behavioral techniques on
right,
your husband. It was that you didn't disclose, and that's manipulative. Are you concerned about that? Was he concerned about that?
Well, he and I actually talked about this. I mean, the point is that people go around trying to change each other's behavior all day long already, right? Nagging's trying to change behavior.
Nature of life.
Right. So all I did was do it, but put it on a positive spin and maybe think about it more. And, you know,
right, but if you're nagging somebody, then you're saying to them in a direct fashion, I don't like that you left your bike gear all over our bed.
Right.
If you're using these techniques and having an inside little joke with yourself, then it's another level of manipulative, isn't it?
Well, I think maybe that's got to go to the motive. I mean, to me, it wasn't like an inside little joke. It was like, why not try to make things better between my husband and I, and why not try something new? I mean, clearly nagging wasn't working, and criticizing didn't work too well.
Let's take some phone calls.
Okay.
We have a lot of people out there who have read the article, obviously. And even if you haven't, now you can react to some of the things that Amy Sutherland has been saying. Author of an actual book, Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Traders, and the article from the Sunday Style section of the New York Times earlier this summer called What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. And Michelle in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Michelle.
Good morning. I'm going to start with a pet peeve, Brian.
Okay.
You said manipulativeness instead of manipulation.
Well,
that's,
I guess I'm guilty, but at least you were direct.
You are so well spoken so much of the time. I was.
Thank you, but you were direct in telling me what my fault was there. Go ahead.
I know, a pet peeve. Okay, I raised 5 children with a difficult husband. I used this method. It worked so well on the children. It was amazing. But you know, when I used it on my husband, and he was really difficult, I have to say it worked. But it worked, and then I just felt so, I lost respect for him as a person.
Oh, no.
What do you mean?
Because he was just like putty in my hands. It was like not living with a full, you know, grown adult.
Michelle, you got to tell us a story then. What did you do? Really, what did you do that worked so well?
Okay, in the mowing of the lawn, lived on a block in the city, living in an area where people all mowed and manicured their lawns, he was like, I don't mow lawns. Okay, I don't mow lawns.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, and when your dog comes and drags the trash on the lawn, you don't pick it up. You just let it sit there all day long. If you can imagine trash on your lawn. Okay, So I said, and so what you do, you say, honey, you are so busy. You are just so swamped with work. It's not a problem. I'll take care of it.
Ah, you got the guilt
going.
And
so you do that. So you take care of it. You mow the grass and you clean up the trash when the dog has dragged trash bags on your lawn and broken them up. And, you know, this is really pretty awful.
Okay, I get it. And next time you call up, Michelle, you should just tell me how I almost pronounced the word correctly. Anyway, thank you very much. Amy, any reaction to Michelle? Is that the same thing?
Not quite. That's a little different. I mean, in some ways, I'm trying to think of what a parallel would be in the exotic animal training world. And I suppose the closest thing it would be is what trainers call modeling, and that's where essentially – pardon me, it's not modeling, maybe mimicry – where you basically do something that you want the animal to do, like turn around, but just by showing by example.
Linda in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm a psychologist. And I loved Amy's article. I was told about the article by my husband, who's also a psychologist, and he says, this is an article you will love. I might say that I have found that what Amy discovered in terms of extinguishing certain responses is something that I found I did intuitively with my husband. what I wanted to comment about is that the techniques Amy talks about are ones that have been around for a long time and have been used by psychologists and therapists in treatment for various kinds of disorders.
Get people back to
dinner.
Yeah.
But they're very, very useful, and I've actually used it in my work with couples in helping them deal with certain frustrations in their marriage.
Right. So it can be used for abnormal psychology to get back people to better functioning, or it can be used in this kind of a relationship situation. Well, Amy, there was a surprise at the end of your article, which is that your husband, after you finally told him what you were doing, started to use the same techniques on you.
That's true. I talk about how in the world of animal training, the trainers talk about the moment in which the animal they were working with understands training so well that they use it back on them as a sort of form to communicate. And that essentially sort of happened to me with my husband. And, you know, I wasn't really hiding that I was using this animal training in a general way. I was talking about all these ideas and these concepts I was learning while I was working on my book. And he sort of, as I was talking about them, began to soak them up. And so he eventually turned a very specific technique on me one morning when I was complaining for like the umpteenth time about a set of braces I had put on my teeth. And he gave me what we would call a least reinforcing scenario, which comes from the world of dolphin training. And that's where if a dolphin is doing something a trainer doesn't like, they just will pause, not respond in any way, even try to – they won't look at the animal with the idea that any reaction will fuel that behavior, negative or positive reaction. So when I was complaining about my braces yet again – my husband just like sort of looked at he didn't exactly not look at me, but he looked at me with that sort of, you know, fog that comes into spouses' eyes sometimes.
And so you realized this, and how did you feel about it?
I actually was pretty impressed because it just showed what a quick study he was. And also, I mean, to me it's like I like the idea that you could sort of change or improve your relationship in a sort of positive way, instead of him saying, you know, shut up, I've heard this like the third time today. And
we have to take a break.
Okay.
But in your book, you describe how the animals actually do this back to the trainer sometimes after a certain point.
Well, they know how to use it. Yeah, they can get to know how to use the training too.
That's amazing. All right, we'll continue with Amy Sutherland and your calls. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Amy Sutherland, who has written a book called Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers, but who is much better known for having written the spin-off article in the New York Times Sunday Style section this summer, What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage, a persistent most emailed list winner. And so we're taking your phone calls if you've read it or you're just hearing her talk about it. 212-433-WNYC on using kind of Skinnerian or animal training behaviorism on your spouse to get them to do what you want them to do by being positive rather than negative and not even telling them along the way. 212-433-WNYC or email brianlehrershow@WNYC.org. Here's an email, Amy. It says, I forwarded this article to my mom. She forwarded it to a friend of hers. Her friend wrote back and asked, why didn't our mothers tell us this? My mother replied, I don't know, but look who's sending it to me. Also, my husband and I both read it, but didn't tell each other. Long story about how we found out that each other had read it, but we were suspicious of each other keeping the article to ourselves.
Well, see, that was never my point. And that's why in the article I talk about at the end how my husband used it back on me. I mean, it's really not a secret weapon. You know, it's, you know, these to me were just a way to sort of help navigate the small annoyances of everyday life. And they're, you know, that's what they're for.
Another email. This one says, this was a cute, reasonably well-crafted 1,000-plus-word essay on what most of us know anyway, we just don't say out loud. And there's an argument to be made, perhaps you can make it, that this sort of female fodder sends the women's movement back many, many years. But I was far more interested in why, given what is going on in the world, ice caps melting, gas prices, bombs being tossed this way and that, that this was the article that remained in the top 10 for such a long period of time. Is it a reflection of the Oprahization of America, as in we may not be able to resolve the issues in the Middle East, but Mars versus Venus, that is possible?
I think it was one of the reasons it was most emailed was just because it was fun. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, we get a steady diet of all the serious stuff. And, you know, it's nice to take a break every once in a while. And then the other thing I think is that we have all these big problems, but every day we have lots of little problems. And, you know, isn't it nice to try to come up with a new way to go about those?
Do you think you set the women's movement back?
No, I don't really quite understand that, because I don't understand how nagging could be the sort of progressive feminist approach.
Guess what? We have a positive reinforcement animal trainer calling in.
Yay.
I think. Mira in Oceanside. Is that what you do?
Yeah, that's what I do. Absolutely. Hi, Brian and Amy.
Hi. What kind of animals do you work with?
Primarily dogs and the occasional bird or cat and humans.
Yay!
Positive
Higher primates.
Training. Yeah. Yes. Primates all the way. It transfers over into every species available that I've tried it on, and so far the scientific literature holds up with that. They've trained everything using positive reinforcement, not just humans and dogs and dolphins and you name it. They've done it.
So, Mira, are you married?
I am, yeah.
And
my husband is not an animal trainer, but he does understand the principles, and together we apply it to our parenting. We have a 3-year-old daughter, and whenever I'm in a quandary about how to react to her behavior, I break it down and I think about if a dog or an animal were acting out in this way, how would I respond? And I usually find that my gut reaction was just to apply positive reinforcement and to mark good behavior and just kind of ignore the bad behavior pays off. It's very direct.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things you bring up, too, is that to analyze the behavior from, like, an animal trainer's perspective, I think one of the great things that does is make you more objective and take what's going on less personally. And
Absolutely.
So, right. And so that you're approaching it as a problem to be solved instead of, like, why does my child spite me that way?
In fact, here's another email. And, Mira, you can stay on to react to this too. It says, I think it's important to focus on the fact that Amy Sutherland is not just talking about changing the behavior of her husband and people around her. She's changing her own behavior
Absolutely.
In reacting to things around her. For those who are offended by the feeling of being manipulated, the important thing to realize is that Amy is changing her own behavior first.
Yeah, and probably 50% or more of the change was in me. Because, you know, ultimately you can only control your own behavior, and that's what animal trainers work with constantly, right?
Absolutely.
And so they have to learn these epic amounts of self-control, patience, really being observant, and all these are traits that can only help you in your human life too.
So Mira, the school that this book is actually about,
Moore Park
College. Okay, it's Moore Park College, known as the Harvard of Animal Training. I guess you didn't go there.
No, I didn't go there, no.
But she says the students are predominantly women. Is it your experience, Mira, that there are more women doing the kind of work you do?
Yeah, it's very heavily predominated by women because I find, and this is probably a gross generalization, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but I do find that women have more patience and self-control, and that tends to make them very... they have a knack with animals that sometimes men don't have that patience for. And I know I'm going to get flack for that.
All right. Don't give out your email address on the air. Mira, thank you very much. As a matter of fact, Maureen Dowd, I bet you didn't think you were going to wind up inspiring a Maureen Dowd column, right? But she interviews an anthropologist who suggests these training techniques might actually work better on women since women are more cued into emotional cues.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, so many women have problems with their husbands because they feel like their husbands are detached. So they would, I think, especially respond to getting more positive rewards or reinforcement from their husbands.
And you say your husband has picked up these same techniques from your use of them. So you don't have an opinion as to whether they work better on you or on him?
I really can't say. I mean, you know, one of the things I thought about when I was doing this, I talked about this in the column, is that one of the things exotic animal trainers do is they're always learn as much as they can about the species that they're working with and the individual animal as well, like what their background was. Were they hand reared? Did they come in from the wild? All these things. And so, you know, I think when you're training somebody, working with another human, it's worth sort of taking this mindset and really thinking about this person, right? Because a reward to me isn't the same reward to you. So these are simple little ideas that are actually harder to do in practice than what they would seem at first.
My guest on WNYC, Amy Sutherland, author of a new book called Kick, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons at the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers, just published by Viking. But she's also the author of that spin-off little article in the New York Times Sunday Style section a few weeks ago called What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage, How She Applied These Techniques on Her Husband, and then it became the most emailed article in the history of the world. No, in the history of the New York Times this summer.
In the history of husband training.
Okay, so What Shamu... Right, definitely that. What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. So how about this email, Amy? This says, I was the project manager for the most recent Shamu show, Believe, at SeaWorld Parks, and had the most amazing experience working with the trainers and the animals. Mm-hmm. Throughout the process, I realized how this positive reinforcement could be used in the corporate world. A boss that notices all of the wonderful things you do will allow you to continue to do right rather than wrong.
Absolutely. This stuff goes across the board. I mean, I have to tell you that it makes me, I really felt after working at this book that us humans could use to all have at least a primer course in animal training using positive reinforcement because, you know, just like the students at the school, a teacher there told me why they were learning animal training, that they think they're learning about animals, but what they're really learning are human skills. So that pretty much does it.
What surprised you most about the training of animal trainers?
Just the epic amounts of self-control and patience and how they have to learn to overcome their innate higher primateness. I mean, there's nothing about being human that makes you naturally inclined to this. You really have to teach yourself.
Here's another email that says, Someone was lamenting that this article was the most emailed while all sorts of serious stuff is going on in the world. But imagine what it would be like if Israel practiced least reinforcing response techniques toward Hezbollah, for instance.
Well, that is an interesting idea, isn't it? I mean...
Have you actually taken it to that level? So, okay. So Hezbollah fires rockets into Israel and kills Israelis. And then instead of responding with a negative reinforcement, dropping bombs on Hezbollah, Israel does nothing. Does that work in the military?
I don't know. But, you know, the thing is like what's going on right now, doesn't that seem sort of like been there, done that? And how did it work the last go round? I mean, you know, I just took this as a funny, fresh approach to life in general. But, you know, there's a real kernel of philosophy in here, which is worth thinking about.
By the way, I see somebody just called up. I'm not going to put him on the air. And maybe I should point out, and said, I looked up manipulativeness in the dictionary, and it's there. So, but manipulation is still better to say. Abby calling from Atlanta. How are you hearing us in Atlanta today, Abby?
I'm well. A former listener from when I lived in New York, so nice to be hearing you
again.
Great.
And you're hearing us on the web, I guess?
I am.
Hi.
Hi. I read this article. My sister emailed it to me a few weeks ago, and I've been using it on my husband. I didn't give it to him because he would pick up on it, but he actually said the other day, you know, it's so nice to be appreciated when I do something small.
Ta-da.
And I've been using the ignoring technique.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, besides that it seems to work, it just makes me much more calm.
Yes.
Because now I'm not getting all worked up over it, and it really seems to just give me a sense of calm, not sweat the small stuff, and, you know, makes our time together more enjoyable.
Now, isn't that a relief, too, to
it
stop
is.
That?
It's just, you know, one less thing you have to do in the day.
Right.
Thank you very much. And there was one of the letter writers to the Times in response to your article who noted that the one whose behavior actually changed was you, not so much your husband.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, before I sort of became the de facto husband whisperer, the thing that had really sort of struck home to me is that, and I write about this in the book, that my time at the school at Moore Park College really changed me for the better. And I didn't expect that when I started this book. And it was just learning these lessons of seeing how positive reinforcement worked and learning lessons of self-control and patience and looking at the world in a more positive way. It all sounds very trite, but it's really helped me in my life.
You said the husband whisperer.
I know. I'm sorry. I may regret that, huh?
Brian in Manhattan. You're on WNYC.
Hey, perfect timing, because I'm calling about the dog whisperer, which I've been a big fan of, and your article came up right in the middle of my sermonizing to all my friends and family about the techniques that he uses on dogs that I think are applicable to humans. He has two sort of mantras that I do. One is he says you have to be calm and assertive. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, that's all any living being wants you to be.
Right.
Is to just be calm and assertive. It's so basic. And the other thing he says that you should do to your dogs, which I think people should do with their loved ones and family, and especially kids, is give them exercise, discipline, and then affection in that order. And it's great. So anyway, so same techniques, different teacher, but again, something else to be learned.
Not always an easy balance to achieve, because calm sometimes is associated with passive, and assertive is sometimes associated with, you know, wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing when people work with, say, big cats, dangerous animals. They have to remain very, very calm, but they always have to be acting as if they are very confident.
Yes.
You know, so it's the same thing, and it's this weird sort of duality, this balance you're trying to strike right then.
Nicole in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, guys. I am absolutely dumbfounded that this is a topic on the Brian Lehrer Show, because this is something that I've been discussing with my colleagues for a long time. And I'm a teacher, and I'm also a dog person. And prior to becoming a teacher, I had never had dogs. And I just happened to start teaching about 5 or 6 years ago. And in that time, we adopted a shelter dog. And I took her to a dog training school, a very famous one in Madison, New Jersey. It's wonderful. And I noticed as I started going through all these things that every single part of it can translate into classroom management with my teaching. And I found that absolutely fascinating. So, but I never wanted to admit it because it's a little less PC than saying, oh, I use this on my husband. So I find it wonderful. And you know, it's about interacting positively with humans and looking at their needs. So I really sincerely appreciate the show today.
Oh, Brian, I just want to say, I actually heard from a number of teachers, email-wise, that told me after that column that they were using those same techniques. And, you know, this is all these ideas that progressive animal trainers are using come from the world of human psychology, which is the sort of basic psychology is operant conditioning. It's also sometimes called behavioral analysis. And the trainers borrowed this, and so in a sense, we're just borrowing it back when we use it.
Absolutely. I think, too, to add on to that, that it forces the person who is doing the so-called training, for lack of a better word, it forces you to get into the mindset of really identifying what behavior you would like to see.
Right. Mm. That's a really good point, because a lot of times people are just sort of flailing around, not really. They want somebody to stop something, but they haven't really clarified what they want them to do.
Nicole, are you married?
I am.
So how do you...
probably listening right now at work.
Well, here's one for you and your husband. Here's an email that says, one item not addressed in the wonderfully funny article is how to get a spouse to take on or complete household projects. My technique, take out the scariest, most dangerous tool needed for the project and say, honey, how do you change the blade drill on this? Guaranteed to get instant results, she says.
Absolutely. I don't use it on him, but he is, you know, he has adopted the same techniques with our little Shiba Inu mix. So it's amazing, and I'm so happy that this is kind of coming out in the open.
Thank you very much. There is one of the techniques though that's listed besides approximations and least reinforcing that you call incompatible behavior.
Yeah,
that's a little scary.
Well, it sounds scary, but it really isn't. You know, I think actually a lot of parents, especially parents, but people are doing this without realizing what that's what they're doing. And that is, in the world of exotic animal trainers, is that if an animal is doing a behavior that they would like to stop, instead of trying to train them to stop it, they train them to do something else that they can't do at the same time. The example of this in the story was that a bird trainer wanted to stop his birds from landing on his head, and so he trained them to land on a mat because they couldn't land on a mat and his head at the same time. So, you know, I see this every holiday season when I go to the grocery store around Thanksgiving time, and there all of a sudden is an epic number of men in the store, and I suspect a lot of those men have been giving an incompatible behavior, and that is go to the store so that you leave the kitchen and get out of the way.
So you wrote, and you wrote in your article that you can't stop a badger from digging, you can't train that out of them, and you can't stop, in your case, your husband from losing his keys.
That's right.
So really, again, you changed
and
adjusted and accept one of the things that most annoyed you about him.
Well, the thing is with the whole key losing thing is that people sort of lose sight of is that I didn't train out his – he still loses his keys. But what I changed was the behavior that came around losing the keys.
Amy Sutherland's book is called Kick, Bitten, and Scratched, Life and Lessons of the World's Premier School for Exotic Animal Trainers, published by Viking. Her article, What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage – you can link to it from our site at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
Whoa, if I could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting with a cheetah. What a neat achievement it would be. If we could talk to the animals and learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig, and flea.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.